Well, here we are in the middle of summer, and this is the time your garden should be producing flowers and a lot of vegetables, a lot of produce. It can also start to look a little neglected. And on Garden Talk today, we'll take a look at what you can do to bring those plants back to their peak form. Larry Mueller here, and my guest, Diana Alfeth, back with us from the northern part of the state. She recently retired as UW Extension Horticulture Outreach Educator for Pierce County. Been with us a number of times to talk veggies and some flowers as well, and certainly we can help with your gardening questions, and I hope you'll join in. What's going on in your garden? Give us a call. The number, 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us to talk@wpr.org. Diana Alfeth, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Hey, Larry. Great to be here again.
How's the season been shaping up in Pierce County this year?
Interesting, which I think it's been across the state. So we're in the far western, west central part of the state. And just like I think the rest of the state, we've had a cool, wet spring that didn't seem to want to jumpstart and get going. And then we had a warm, wet last month or two, which the warmth really made things take off. The warm season plants finally were happy and they took off. So did the weeds, and so have the diseases, and so have the insects. And so, you know, it seems like every year we start this show and we talk about the weird weather this year. But, you know, it's true. The weather is a little different every year and it presents new challenges. And obviously our gardens respond to that. I think in our area, as well as across the state, there was a lot of plants that didn't make it through winter, perennials, yeah. Trees, shrubs, and things. And I think that was more due to the dry conditions in the fall and the fact that the ground didn't freeze until later. And so the plants never went fully dormant. I think it's more drought stress than cold stress that caused that. But things that had been there for many, many, many years didn't come through. And there's sometimes just no way to fully explain it.
Yeah. In our part of the state, too, we didn't have any snow. And then we got really cold weather. And I think a lot of plants just got, the ground, the frost depth went down pretty deep compared to normal.
Yep. And I think they were already, like I said, stressed from being on the dry side. And but I will say who had a really good winter appears to be deer, because we have herd numbers like crazy, and rabbits and squirrels and all, you know, without that snow, I think they had good access to food. And so there seems to be more wildlife about this summer than normal.
We kind of get distracted, I guess. There's so much going on in the summer, especially this time of year. I think a lot of gardens suffer from that. What's the easiest way to keep your garden looking good?
You're right. And I think, you know, spring comes and we're all excited. We start that garden and we picture this perfect thing. But then, like you say, summers are busy. Everybody is very, very busy. And then you throw into that 90 degrees and humid when it's not really safe and healthy to be out there pulling weeds. But the weeds love that stuff. And so suddenly within a week, things are overgrown with giant ragweed and foxtail and lamb's quarters and all that stuff. And it can be really, really discouraging. And, you know, I know plenty of years when my pumpkin and squash areas never got weeded and I didn't know what was in there. And then when you finally get a frost in the fall and all the weeds die down, it's like, whoa, look, there's pumpkins and squash in there. So it can get discouraging. And so sometimes you have to just think, okay, I can't pull it all the way back to beautiful and perfect. So the biggest thing to do is that you don't want those weeds to flower and set seed, because that's weeds you'll be pulling next year. So if you're weeds are taller than your beans in your garden right now. Ideally, right, you would pull them, but when the weeds get so big, if you pull them up and it's next to a bean plant or a tomato plant, that root system will unearth your desired plant too. So that's hard. So one of the things that you can do is to just cut the weeds off at soil level. You don't have to necessarily get the roots out. Most of these weeds in your vegetable garden, especially, are annual weeds. So if you cut them off at soil level, that kills them. And it opens up the canopy so that your garden plants get the sun and space that they need. And so sometimes it's easier to just go in there with like some hedge trimmers or nice lopping pruner kinds of things and watch where the stems are of your crops, but just cut everything else off. If you have a big enough area, you can use a string trimmer or weed whacker. But the biggest thing is knock them down to the ground and make sure that they don't mature seeds, because once those seeds start maturing and falling to the soil level, then you've got more of these weeds next year to deal with.
Do you like, let's put it this way. What are your thoughts on using mulch as a weed barrier?
You know, I love mulch. And so what I do in my vegetable garden, which I've learned, because I would have that, like I say, where you can't find your pumpkin plants. So when I plant my garden, normally over the winter, I try to save up cardboard boxes, just brown corrugated cardboard. And then when spring comes and I work up my garden, I lay it all down and then I put about 6 inches of straw on top of it. And then I just leave like 5-inch circles, holes for me to plant my tomatoes and peppers and other transplants into. And I'll just leave a little, 4-inch wide row space to put in beans and peas and carrots and lettuce and that sort of a thing. And that keeps all of the weed seeds that are in your soil smothered so they don't germinate. So they only germinate right in those open areas. So it massively reduces your weeding. Now this year I didn't have cardboard, but I had some really great second crop hay that didn't have any weed seeds or seed heads in it. And I put that down about 8 inches thick and then I planted into that. There's a couple spots where some foxtail and lamb's quarters kind of poked through where it was thin, but it's still minimal weeding. Now you can't, it's like, yeah, why didn't you tell me this in the spring, right? But that's the thing to do next year. But even right now, let's say you do have your weeds that have gotten too high. If you go in there and cut them off at ground level, like I just talked about, and lay down a chunk of cardboard on top of that, and then mulch. And again, it needs to be at least 4 inches deep. Sometimes people only put like an inch on it, but that disappears too fast. But that will keep the weeds from coming back, and it will get you through the second half of the season here. And so that's a way to try to reclaim your vegetable garden if it's kind of gotten a little out of control. Now, little things like carrots that are hard to find under the weeds, that's just, you kind of have to get down on your hands and knees and just, pick away the weeds and try to find them. There's not, that's going to be harder than a bigger plant like beans and peppers and that sort of a thing. But the more you can open up that canopy and give the vegetables the light that they need, the more you're going to at least get a decent harvest.
Yeah, while you're down there on those carrots, you might want to do a little thinning. You can always eat those little carrots.
Yeah, and same with like lettuce. I have a tendency to plant my lettuce way too close and thick together, and then it just doesn't really grow well. And it's like, I should know better, but I'm just kind of being lazy when I'm sprinkling that lettuce seed down.
Well, some of those seeds are pretty darn small, so it's hard.
They are. And I'm usually late getting things planted, so I'm in a hurry.
Pete and Lori from Kokana emailed to say they're having problems with their broccoli because of the last hot spell, they think. The heads grew unevenly with some leaves inside the heads, and they all smelled not good, bad. They say that the high temperatures made the heads susceptible to pathogens that attack the heads. Have you heard of this? We're hoping to get some good side shoots yet this year. Is there any way to protect the plants during a hot spell?
Yeah, and that's a common thing. Broccoli and cabbage, you know, all those plants in that family, they like the cool weather. So that's why we try to get them planted as early in the spring as possible. And typically they're done by now in the heat. And you can also be growing some from seed indoors and plant them out here in the next couple of weeks so that you get a fall harvest from them. But once that hot hits them and they bolt, okay, and the heads kind of spread all out and that sort of thing, there's really not much you can do at that point. Typically when they bolt those heads, you certainly can harvest what is there very quickly, but very often it tends to be a little more bitter. Some people will then just let them go to flower and they get the little yellow flowers, which are edible. And some people like those and, you know, put them on salads and things like that. But if you cut away that head that's there, if you have a good, different varieties of broccoli are different. Some send out side shoots better than others, but most of them will send out side shoots. So if you cut away that middle head and those flowers, hopefully you will get some good side shoots that come up that'll be able to be harvested. Now, the other thing that can happen, you know, when they say that it smells, there are a couple of diseases that hit broccoli. There's black rot and there's alternaria, and these can cause usually lesions or spots on the leaves themselves, but that can also affect the heads. And then when, you know, if you're in an area that's had rain like every day, all that water just sitting on those heads can also deteriorate them and get various things in there that start to break down those cells. And once cells start to break down, they stink, especially in something like broccoli and that. So anything that's, you know, brown and yucky, stinky, cut it away because it's never going to heal up and get better. But as far as preventing that, you know, we unfortunately haven't figured out a way to control the weather yet. But one thing that I found helped in is to plant the cool season crops like the broccoli and stuff where they get the full sun, 6 hours of sun, but maybe get shade in the late afternoon when it's the hottest. So if you can put up some kind of a fence on the west side of the plants, or if you have a tree that, you know, starts to shade that area of the garden at like 3 o'clock, then you can reduce the temperature on those plants a little bit in the hottest spells, and that sometimes can help. And then finally, you know, when you're buying your broccoli, there are differences in the varieties, and sometimes maybe you have to sacrifice a little bit of, you know, the bigger head size in order to get one that's more heat tolerant. So because we do get these hot spells and we seem to be getting more of them in summers in Wisconsin, really searching for heat tolerant varieties of these cool season crops is probably a good idea for everybody.
Diana Alfeth, our guest today, retired UW Extension horticulture educator for Pierce County. Great to have her with us. And you can join in. Number to call, if you got a gardening question, I hope you will. Number to call, 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk on WPR News. You're listening to Garden Talk here on WPR News. Larry Mueller here as we take a look at your vegetable garden, your flower garden, and other things probably as well with our guest Diana Alfeth, retired UW Extension Horticulture Outreach Specialist for Pierce County. Number to call, 800-642-1234, or email to talk at WPR.org. And let's take a call from Pam in Madison. Pam, hello. Thank you for calling.
Thank you for taking my question. I bought cilantro. At least I thought I did. And when I got home and looked, it was celery. So I planted it in my pot, but I don't know how to take care of it. I've looked and it says if you don't blanch it, it's bitter. And how do I take care of it?
So is it growing well?
It's growing very well because of the weather.
So you've got it in a pot, but outside?
Yes, I have like about, I think there's three or four, and they're growing just wonderfully. But then I read you had to blanch it, otherwise it was bitter. And so I'm
When you go to cook it.
They said it's bitter if you don't blanch it.
Yeah. So in this case, it's not the cooking part, Larry, but blanching refers to like tying up the leaves and giving it some shades, kind of like with cauliflower, so that the sun doesn't get it. But the newer varieties of celery, most of them have been bred to be what's called self-blanching, which means that, you know, the stalks like stay closer together and kind of shade themselves. So that's hopefully kind of what you have. Otherwise, celery is kind of challenging to grow. And most of us in Wisconsin never used to grow celery until they came up with the self-blanching varieties for that reason, because otherwise you kind of have to like trench them and that sort of thing. So I wouldn't really worry too much about blanching them, because I'm hoping that yours is a self-blanching variety. So the thing is that you don't want them to get dried out. So keeping them evenly watered will make a difference. And otherwise, they're not that hard to grow. They will be susceptible to the weather. You know, the hot spells are going to take their toll on them, just like anything else. As soon as you you don't want to harvest them too soon, because those compounds will be kind of concentrated in there, and that's adds to that bitterness flavor. But otherwise, you can actually start like stealing a stalk here and there if you want it periodically. And we get into this hot weather, it's just kind of tough. So the biggest thing that you can do is, you know, if you have mulch around them to help maintain the water, making sure that they have constant water. Ideally, your soil has good organic matter. That's what they really like. And then look out for pests, because a lot of times we recommend growing celery under row covers, because there are a variety of insects and things that will get after them. And yeah, that's about it. You know, as far as blanching goes, if you want to, basically it's anything that'll keep out the light. So sometimes people would put like a thin brown paper bag over it, or some cardboard, or you know, like shade cloth, something like that. But the thing is that you want to cover the like the stalks, but you don't want to cover the leaves, which sounds weird, but those leaves need the light in order to do photosynthesis to grow the plant. So you just kind of want to wrap around the stalks to prevent the sunlight from hitting the stalks, because that's where the bitterness would come from. So I hope that makes sense.
Pam, does that help?
Growing in a stalk, they're kind of, it's a, you know, looks really healthy. It's about 10 inches tall with leaves, and they aren't making a stalk. They're kind of like a little bush almost.
Okay. Well, they should elongate. into stalks, because obviously that's what we grow celery for. Now you can, you know, harvest leaves and you'll get that celery flavor and stuff, and you can eat that too. But they should elongate as they mature. And the thing is that, you know, you don't want to over fertilize with nitrogen, because that causes a lot of leafy stuff. But you want to make sure that, you know, they do have basic nutrients. So if you haven't, you know, it's hard when you're growing in a pot, because we don't know what that soil mix is. And, you know, if you're growing things in the ground, I can say, hey, Wisconsin has fertile soils with all the nutrients, and, you know, but in a pot, the soil mix can vary dramatically. So don't overly fertilize, because that's just going to cause leaf growth, but they should be elongating and forming stalks here.
Pretty darn soon, actually, I would think.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they haven't started that yet, but, you know, summer's going so silly fast, but it is still only mid-July.
Yeah.
We have, you know, half the growing season to go.
All right. Pam, keep at it. Keep watching them. And thank you so much for calling. Maybe it'll turn out to be a mistake you made earlier. What was it she was trying to buy cilantro?
Cilantro. She thought it was cilantro. So maybe, yeah, I don't know. So I'm one of those that I know a lot of people that hate cilantro and it tastes like soap to me. So I would never even consider buying cilantro, whereas my brother puts it on absolutely everything. So maybe, you know, taste a few of those bushy leaves and make sure if it tastes like celery or cilantro, because
I'd take a taste of one of the leaves just to see. That's what I do.
Because the leaves do look somewhat similar. So, yeah.
There you go. Thank you, Pam, for calling. You can join in too. Number to call 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Well, water's come up a few times in the show, and the need for regular watering, but I gotta say, I have not had to do very darn much watering this year, and my friends say the same thing.
Right, and honestly, I think people overwater their gardens more than underwater their gardens. I haven't watered my garden since I first planted it. And once things are in there for 2 weeks, the seeds have germinated or transplants have been in there 2 weeks, they're established enough and again, I use, you know, some mulch, but I haven't watered at all. And I, you know, I talk to a lot of people who have a lot of disease issues and things. Some people will have plants that wilt in the afternoon. So they water them every day, but they're wilting because they're overwatered. And if you overwater, you have a small root system. And so then in the heat of the afternoon, that small root system can't take up enough water to support the plant. So it starts to wilt. So then you feel you got to water, and it's a vicious cycle. But if you're growing in containers, in pots, you absolutely probably have to water them every day. And if it's a 90 degrees and day and those pots are in the sun, you might need to water them morning and night. But if you're growing in the ground, there is no way that you should water your garden more than once every 3 or 4 days, even on a sandy soil, because the soil where the roots are 4, 5, 6 inches down absolutely simply cannot dry out that fast. And think about all the, you know, the trees and the shrubs and the, you know, wild plants around. They're not, if it doesn't rain, they're not getting watered every day. And it's the same with your garden plants, even the annual plants and the vegetables. If you, you really should check the soil before you water. Stick your finger down in the soil and it should be dry an inch down before you water. And if you're watering automatically every day, I see people post online that, oh, in this hot weather, I'm watering my garden twice a day. You're causing more harm than good. That's going to make diseases and insects happy. And too much water is just as stressful, if not more stressful, than not enough water. And so I will say that we make hay for our horses, and we have not had a 4-day stretch without rain.
Yeah.
since May. That's been frustrating. And so if that's the case, there's no reason to be giving your garden supplemental water. So I would really encourage people to back off on watering. I just think it causes a lot of problems. Certainly you don't want your plants to get drought stressed, but there's a lot of overwatering going on.
Okay. Let's go to Michael in Cross Plains. Hi, Michael.
Hey, I was calling a bit with a comment about the previous caller on celery.
Yeah.
I'm a vegetable farmer. I was just listening while I was driving my tractor. And I was thinking, you know, maybe it's possible that that celery plant is actually a celery root if it's not forming a thick stalk. I just thought I would put that comment out there.
Oh.
That's an interesting concept. I hadn't thought of that. There are, celery root that's grown for the bulb, the root kind of thing. So, Yeah, and if it was mislabeled and it was supposed to be cilantro, there's no way to go back and look at that label. But, interesting idea.
Yeah, thanks, Michael. How's your work going in Cross Plains?
Well, we were just planting some cover crops right up until about 10 minutes ago when we started getting rained on.
Oh.
There you go.
Michael.
Which is great for germinating those seeds and stuff. So,
yeah.
Lucky you.
Thanks, Michael, for calling. Appreciate it. Well, let's go to Chris in Madison next. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay. I'm standing out in the rain in my yard in Madison. so not far from Cross Plains. I have two questions. One is about raspberries. I was given a raspberry transplant a couple years ago. Put it in a good spot. It's thriving, but it's not blossoming or putting out fruit. And this is like the second or maybe third year. So my question is, should I give up on that and buy new raspberry starts? And my second question is about transplanting perennials. When is the earliest that I could start doing that?
Okay, well, let's take your second question first. So right now is the worst time to be transplanting perennials. If you buy perennials like from a nursery and they've been in a pot for a while, you can definitely plant them at any time because you have the whole root system. But anytime you transplant perennials, you disturb the roots, you rip off a whole bunch of them, you leave a whole bunch behind. And then when you move them, it has a compromised root system, and so it can't take up water as efficiently. And this being the hottest time of the year, they will suffer. Now, I'm not saying you can't do it. I've done it, especially with things like hosta or shade plants or daylilies, which are really hard to kill. They will get very dramatic. They'll droop. They'll look horrible the rest of this year. But the root system, as long as you keep it watered, will survive and grow next year. So if you absolutely had to move them now, you could take a chance. But ideally, you're going to wait until the weather is a little bit cooler. So normally we're talking maybe at least a month from now. So late August and early September is usually the best time for transplanting perennials. Now, the one caveat to that is if it blooms in the fall, transplant it in the spring. If it blooms in the spring, transplanted in the fall, because the blooming process takes a lot of energy from the plant. And so it's not a great idea to transplant anything when it's in bud or blossom. So that would be that. The raspberry question is a little trickier because raspberries have a lot of little quirks that seem to cause problems. So raspberries grow from the root. They grow a stalk, and that's called the primocane. And then the second year that primocane grows more and becomes a floricane, that's what flowers and produces the berries. And then that cane dies. Okay, now there are ever-bearing raspberries and fall-bearing raspberries. And so that complicates things a little bit more because we don't know exactly what you have. But if you stick a raspberry root in the ground and you never prune it, eventually it should be sending up stalks within 3 years that would become floricanes and actually bloom. So if you've done any pruning away or not, or nipping off the tops of any of those, that could be why you haven't gotten flowers or berries yet. But the other thing is, we never recommend getting raspberry plants from somebody else because raspberries are susceptible to a whole bunch of little viruses and stuff that can get into them. And so I know my mom had a raspberry patch that went for, 25 years and it was still producing, but some years it would look kind of mangy and other years it would look better. Generally speaking, the recommendations are that you eliminate and restart a raspberry patch every 15 years because of the viruses that build up in it. And those viruses can cause things like misshapen fruit and small fruit or no fruit. So there's always a chance that what you got from a friend had viruses in it, and that's why it's not going well. Otherwise, they do need full sun, so hopefully they get at least 6 hours of full sun because that will also make them not flower. If you top dress, like with some compost, make sure that you give them some fertilizer in the spring when the growth starts going. They should otherwise be flowering. So don't prune anything. Give them fertilizer in the spring. You can wait and see. Or if you want to replace, buy raspberries from a nursery where they've been certified virus-free.
All right. Chris, you've got some thinking there. She doesn't know if it's been 2 or 3 years on those plants. She could wait till next year or the sure thing.
I'd probably give them another year. And like I said, be sure that you don't prune anything off because theoretically, you can get into pruning where you prune them halfway down and then the floricane, but I don't want to complicate things for her because you should still get some berries even if you don't do any pruning. So I'd leave them alone, see what happens.
Yeah.
But I will say that the black raspberries, the wild things, the black caps and stuff this year are in full production right now around here. And the berries are huge this year because of all this rain that we've gotten. So that's that's another upside to all the wet weather.
Chris, there you go. You got some thinking to do there. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. JC in Wautoma, we'll go to you now. Hi, JC.
Hello. I have a question about the raspberries. I have ever-bearing raspberries. I applied some 10-10-10 fertilizer a couple weeks ago, and the fertilizer had been soaked. I'm wondering if that did any damage to the raspberries.
So you had granular that you soaked?
Hello?
You had granular fertilizer and you soaked the granular?
Yes, it had gotten soaked in the rain.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Okay, before you put it on?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it certainly didn't harm the raspberries any. But when fertilizer gets wet, a lot of times, especially the nitrogen in it, can be released and depleted some. So you might not have gotten the full bang for the buck on that fertilizer, but it certainly wouldn't hurt the raspberries any. I would not reapply at this time because now is not the time to be fertilizing. So if you, at this point, I would wait till like next spring when growth first starts before trying to fertilize again. And that's a really good point to make. So right now, after June 21st, when the days start getting shorter, we think, hey, now this is the, you know, the middle of summer, this is great. But the plants are actually already starting to think about winter. So the decreasing day length triggers them to think about getting ready for winter. And so perennial plants, trees and shrubs and stuff, they will stop putting on new growth. And they start thinking about sending the energy down to the roots to store for winter. So we do not want to fertilize perennial plants after like at least July 1st, if not a little sooner than that, because fertilizer pushes growth and it encourages growth. And we don't want them growing at this time of year because we don't want them growing on the top. We want them worrying about the roots and preparing for winter. Plants need the nutrients when they're putting on their flush of growth. So in raspberries' case, that's right after winter when those canes start leafing out and new canes start shooting up from the root system. So in your vegetable garden, if you wanted to put a little more nitrogen on your onions right now, I'd be okay with that. But pretty much everything else, you know, like even your like tomatoes and peppers, you don't want to be adding fertilizer anymore because they should be concentrating on producing fruits, not leaves or top growth. And like I said, you might have lost a little bang for your buck on that fertilizer, but it won't have hurt the raspberries any.
There you go, JC. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Diana Alfeth, our guest today, UW Extension retired horticulture outreach specialist. I'm Larry Mehler for Garden Talk on WPR News. Taking a look at your garden today with Diana Alfeth, Larry Mehler here. Thanks for joining in today. Questions? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email to talk at WPR.org. Number of emails, Shirley emailed that her phlox gets yellow every summer. What's up with that and how can she prevent it?
So phlox are susceptible to several diseases, most of them fungal diseases, depending on your variety. So the older varieties especially would be really susceptible to powdery mildew. In that case, the leaves will eventually turn kind of white and fuzzy looking, but they can, some yellowing can be another symptom of some powdery mildew. I did see the pictures, and there's a lot of like brown crispiness on the edges of her leaves too, which makes me think that that may very well be something like anthracnose or some other fungal disease. And we're starting to really see a lot of that on a lot of plants right now, again, because of the water, the rain, the wetness that we've had, especially in springtime when it was kind of, we know we had a lot of cool weather that encourages some of these fungal things, but the leaves get infected and the fungi are living on these leaves and stuff, but they still look green to us, but then eventually the cells collapse and then we see the brown. So even though we're seeing the brown and the yellowing now, that infection occurred, you know, 6 weeks ago or whatever. So bottom line is, I think you've got some fungal things going on. Once you see symptoms, you can never cure that. So you can't take a brown leaf and turn it back to green. You might be able to stop the progression if it's something that's progressing by using a fungicide. But very often, because the weather conditions change, we get into warmer weather, usually drier weather, then conditions aren't right for the fungus, so it doesn't start to progress. So there's no, you know, there's no value in treating it. The way to know for sure would be to send a sample of your phlox into the plant disease diagnostics clinic down at the UW and get it tested to find out for sure what you're dealing with. Because if you get this problem every year, that means that you're probably going to continue to get it every year. And knowing exactly what pathogen is causing the problems will tell you for sure how to treat it. Otherwise, generally speaking, I would say if you can open up air circulation around there as much as possible so that it dries out more, you can treat. But remember that fungicides are preventatives. They're not cures. So if you have a plant that gets a fungal disease every year, you're going to want to put that fungicide on before you start seeing symptoms. But again, getting a test to know exactly which pathogen you're dealing with will tell you the best way to treat it and deal with it in the future. If you're buying phlox now to put in your garden or any other kind of plant, you know, the best advice is always to read the label and pick the one that says disease resistant mm-hmm. because they've bred phlox to be more disease resistant, but not all varieties are.
Matthew in Madison has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Matthew.
Hey, Larry. My question I'm wondering about is I have some tomato plants and cucumber plants in garden boxes in my backyard, and I had mixed topsoil and some peat moss together. I think that because the peat moss is pretty like water absorbent. And so I'm just wondering like how much of a positive effect peat moss can have when mixed with topsoil and like what a good mix ratio might be. I was just kind of guessing when I did it.
So peat moss is great because it, as you said, it holds moisture. It's organic matter. The challenge with peat moss is that it's a very low pH. It's down in the fours in most cases. And most of our garden plants want, like tomatoes and cucumbers, they would love their growing medium pH to be maybe like 6.8, something, you know, in that area. So when you guess and you, you know, put those things together, it's really, really hard to say what the ratio should be because we don't know what the pH of the topsoil is either. And so if that's also a low pH, you could end up with a growing medium that's a little bit low on the pH side. So we don't recommend, you know, doing like 50-50 on the peat moss kind of a thing because unless you're growing blueberries, because of that pH question. You can always take a sample, send it to the soil lab, have them tested. I really don't recommend the little over-the-counter at the garden center test tube pH things and stuff because I don't think they're accurate. And you're going to spend as much on one of those kits as you would by sending the sample into the actual professional soil lab. So $15 is a great investment. But otherwise, it's hard to say a perfect ratio because the topsoil mix that you have could have a higher or lower organic matter content. And so, you know, it's just impossible to say, you know, 60-40, 50-50, whatever. There's just so much variability depending on what it is that you have. But your plants are in there this year. And so you could send a sample in to see what the pH is, or you could like wait until the end of the year or early spring and send in a sample and see where you're at. They can test for organic matter content and pH and your nutrient levels, and then you would be all set for next year.
Matthew, there you go. Thank you for calling. Karen in Wausau has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Karen.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about beefsteak tomato plants. And we've always gotten our plants from a reputable greenhouse. And we have about 9 plants. And they're in a raised bed. And they're probably about 4 feet tall. And there isn't one blossom on any of them. So it's a little frustrating because it's getting a little late. So there's no sign of any tomato at all on any of them.
Okay. So there's a couple of things that can cause this. One would be excessive nitrogen fertilizer. So if you over-fertilize them, a lot of times that causes a lot of leaves and they don't think about blossoming. But also what's happened this year is tomatoes, they like warm weather, but they don't like hot weather. And once it gets like above 86 degrees or so, they're stressed just like we are. But of course, they don't get to go into the air conditioning. But that will cause them to stop or abort their flower. So they might have been starting flower buds and then they got a heat spell and they just aborted the flowers. And so it's just going to take a little bit of time for them to reset and try again. I'm assuming that you've got them in full sun, 6 to 8 hours of full sun, because you've grown them before. And the other things that can cause aborted flower buds are floods, or more likely overwatering than underwatering, because tomatoes are shockingly drought tolerant. But otherwise, you know, it's kind of like, yeah, it's maybe getting late, but in summer, tomatoes can catch up really fast. So I wouldn't worry yet. And I hate to be the broken record of, oh, just blame it on the weather, right? But that is what we do, right? When we don't have an answer, we blame it on the weather. But the flowers may have aborted due to the weather.
And you may, yeah, and if it all doesn't work, you've got the farmers markets in the fall.
That's right.
I used to grow lots of tomatoes, and I would make a sort of a V8 type tomato juice. I'd make 50 quarts a year. And I had a big garden then. And I finally got tired of having to, you know, every night be out there making V8 tomato juice. I finally decided to go to the farmer's market and buy the tomatoes and do it all in one shoot.
There is truth to that. You know, you can get them all at once. You can go to the market and talk to a farmer and order a bushel ahead of time or whatever, and get them when it's convenient for you. And you know, that's kind of a good way to go sometimes.
Ellie in Middleton emailed. She has two huge rhubarb plants she'd like to split or divide. When and how should she do that in our last minute or so here?
So kind of like what I said earlier, right now is not the time because it's too hot. But you can do it in early spring or late fall. So if you wait till spring, do it just before the new growth begins. So if you're just starting to see a little bit of stuff sticking out of the soil, otherwise you can do it this fall in I like to say Labor Day is the time to start laboring with your plant divisions and transplanting. And that would be the time, just get them watered in. Don't fertilize them until spring, just because, again, we don't want to be encouraging any kind of top growth. But once it's September, you can dig out what you want, move it. Some people like to trim off the leaves, but I like to leave any kind of leaves that are green, because that's how the plant gets its energy, by doing photosynthesis. But if leaves are yellowish or, you know, really off color, they're not going to be doing
take
much photosynthesis.
Off.
So then you can take them off. But do it after Labor Day.
Always a pleasure, Diana. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you.
Sounds good, Larry. Have a great day.
Diana Alfus, retired UW Extension Horticulture Outreach Specialist for Pierce County. We'll have her back and we'll do this again. Next week, Bruce Spangenberg will be with us from UW Extension. And so we'll look forward to that as well. And boy, thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks to our team for creating our shows. Our team, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. Our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Always a lot of fun for me. I hope it's been for you, and I hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.